This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin on Zoomer Radio, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie Dobbin?
Excellent, Dean. How are you doing? You sound like you're a long ways away.
Oh, well, and I'm really not. I mean, I'm in the Collingwood studio, so I'm not any further away than I normally am to you. Last week, we were shoulder to shoulder
in the Collingwood studio.
Yeah, almost cheek to cheek.
Almost.
So how's your week been? How's the garden in your neck of the woods?
Happy to say we got more rain, always counting and joyful when rain falls. So I think we got about 40 millimeters over the week. Today's cloudy, but I see some blue popping through. So obviously it's still got things to do in the garden, bulbs to plant, got the garlic in, I'm happy to say. And I would just like to, while we're chatting back and forth here, welcome our special guest, Stephen Biggs. Welcome, welcome. Good morning.
Thank you. Fun way to spend a Saturday morning.
For sure. And you're in your home studio, so we're scattered all over the place here. And of course, Stephen's been on the show many times, a colleague of mine, really an edible food gardener, though a published author, many other things going on with you, right?
Yeah. All about the edibles for me, but hey, I grow lots of ornamental stuff too. I've got tulips growing under my rhubarb, so.
Don't we all? But one of the reasons I asked you to be here this week is because we're at that time of year where people are really saying, I want to keep some things alive. I want to get them in my house. How do I overwinter? And one of the classics, one of the things I always think of you for is figs, because you've been growing figs for how long?
Oh, figs for 20 plus years.
Exactly. And you probably still have the same fig you started with 20 plus years ago.
I do. They're like family heirlooms.
Written them into your will, have you?
I'm priming my kids to take them over one day.
You hope. But in the meantime, you get some great figs. I mean, that's part of what you're doing is you're growing really cool, unusual plants, but actually harvesting food from them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, with figs, you can eat the fruit, you can use the leaves in the kitchen. And I just smoked some cheese with fig wood. So very versatile.
I thought you were going to say you smoked a fig leaf. Smoked. Wow. That's cool. And your latest book is how about growing olives where you think you can't?
Yeah. So olives are like figs. It's one of those things that people don't think of growing in cold climates, but they're fantastic potted plants that don't need a lot of care in the winter.
As long as you've got the space to tuck them into a frost-free location. So I'm hoping that, and we'll get Dean to do the numbers in a second, but I'm hoping some of our listeners who are, you know, we've had questions in the past, and I'm always like, don't ask me about figs, ask the fig pig. That'll be Stephen Biggs. So I send people, and of course, the website and the podcast that you and your daughter, Emma, have done over the years is called?
It's Food Garden Life. So just foodgardenlife.com.
Right. So one word, three words into one word, food, garden, life. So did you watch the baseball game last night?
I did not, but I heard shouting from the basement from my wife and son watching the baseball game.
Yeah, it wasn't a happy game for Jays fans, but we have another chance tonight. So fingers crossed and, you know, get those nachos going. So yeah. Dean, I haven't done my announcements, but you better do some numbers and then I have a few announcements.
You got it. The numbers to call if you live in Toronto are 416-360-0740. And outside Toronto, 1-866-740-4740. Please do let Owen know if you are a first-time caller, because then I will give you the garden wings. We would love for you to call often, call early, and one question per call, please. There you go, Charlie.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Food, figs, lemons, olives. I tried growing an olive once that I picked up in a garden center. I can't say it was successful. I don't think I watered it enough. It was in a pot in full sun in the summer, and it didn't really do much other than shrivel up on me. So we'll talk more about that. Mm-hmm. Yes. Even professional horticulturalists can kill things, which is important for everybody to remember, you know, that we all kill things. It's perfectly normal. Sometimes it's just that wasn't meant to be. Listen, the Canadian Rose Society has contacted me to encourage everyone to think about joining the Canadian Rose Society. There's a membership drive on right now for the entire month of November. And of course, why you would want to join the Canadian Rose Society is because they, as so many societies do, they have great presentations with, you know, national and international speakers. They have a monthly newsletter, support for public gardens and rose education. And rose lovers from all across Canada are a pretty fun group. I mean, roses are not hard to grow, but again, some people will say, but I kill them every time I plant them. So learn more about roses by joining the Canadian Rose Society. As well, of course, that Agent Court Garden Club, they're always busy. They have another meeting upcoming Monday, November 10th, 7:30 p.m. This time, the topic is Christmas floral designs, and they meet at the Knox United Christian Education Center, 2575 Midland Avenue at Shepherd. And my final little note here is the Burlington Hort Society. So Burlington Hort Society meeting Wednesday, November 12th, 6:30 p.m., and their topic that night is practical garden photography. So that can be a pretty useful topic. They meet in the auditorium of the Central Arena, 519 Drury Lane in Burlington. Dean, how has you, I haven't really heard from you. How has your week been?
Well, my week's been good. Very, very busy. Yeah, doing some filling in work on our sister station. Did a week of classical mornings for Gene Stillwell. And in my neck of the woods, annually, I do, for about a decade and a half now, I do haunted historic walks up here in Collingwood. Right. And so the town of Collingwood always sort of books me about 6 months in advance. And so I did three in the last week and a bit, which was interesting because two of them were on Blue Jays game days. And so we wanted to hustle the walk through so people could get home. And then the last one was a few nights ago where there was no Jays game, but it rained. And so so we also were, but you know, it's the season. Tis the season. Yeah, no, they're always, I think the town says they're the fastest thing to sell out just about of anything they do because they're just their popular thing. And so, yeah, it took about 40 people through each walk and yeah, great. So,
and you're outside the whole time on the walks, like doing sort of an architectural thing. You don't go inside.
It's all through the downtown core. No. It's outside, and it starts at our museum and ends at our museum, and it weaves around our historic downtown core. And of course, Collingwood established the town back in 1858. So it's just lots of historic buildings, and I chat about architecture a little bit, and not so much about gardening.
Why not?
But yeah, it comes up on one occasion, which is a story for another for another show. But it does come up in one remark. But yeah, no, it's always good. Always good.
Great. Something about buried bodies, probably.
Yeah, it is something about that, actually. And I have to tell you, feeling very, very, very fallish out there today. I walked from home into the Collingwood studio and rained most of the way, but that's okay. It's to be expected. And a little bit brisk. I think we're sitting at about 6 degrees. And so, you know, I don't know what that means garden-wise. I can tell Stephen, I know a little bit about figs only because the neighbors that we used to have when my wife and I first bought our house in Hamilton, we bought it in December. And then as the spring came up, our next-door neighbors had a completely dirt yard, which was dominated by tomatoes and basil. They're an Italian couple. And then I watched this gentleman, Tommaso, was in the back in the spring. This was before we knew them. And I thought, oh, my goodness, what is he doing? He was unearthing graves in the back, and he had fig trees that he would lay down in the earth and bury in these graves. And then he would raise them up every season. He'd had that for a few decades. And so they would have figs every year.
Oh, beautiful. That's the classic way of overwintering a fig tree, too.
And that's
he would unearth like half of the root ball and then lay it down, cover it with boards, And then he would, and I'd never seen that before. And I thought, oh my goodness, what has this man got buried in his backyard? And they became very, very dear to us, but we would have fresh figs from them from time to time.
Ah, what great neighbors.
Get them Indeed. To do all the work while you get to eat the goodies. But yeah. So that's Dean, you bring up a really good point there. But actually, I guess we do have to go for a break. When we come back from this break, I want Stephen explain to us exactly why doesn't that kill the fig if we're cutting half the roots off? Or give us a 3D image of what that's all about and why that works, okay?
Will do.
Okay. So here are the numbers again, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. And we'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Are you a full-blown bird nerd or just starting to notice feathered visitors in your fall garden? Either way, Urban Nature Store has everything you need to turn your yard into a bird-watching haven this autumn. Squirrel-proof feeders, ultra-fresh, no-mess bird seed, binoculars so clear you'll catch every flutter. With 9 Ontario stores and online shopping at urbannaturestore.ca, you're just one chirp away from your next backyard adventure. Urban Nature Store, Canada's fall birding headquarters.
Submerge yourself in the mystery and the mastery of one of Canada's most evocative artists. The Art Gallery of Ontario presents David Blackwood, Myth and Legend. Explore a sweeping tribute to Blackwood's extraordinary printmaking, where sea, ice, and story capture Newfoundland and Atlantic Canada with quiet power and unforgettable beauty. Visit this must-see exhibition at the Art Gallery of Ontario today. Learn more at ago.ca.
Half the people listening to me right now don't have a retirement plan.
Janice Honeyman, Portfolio Manager at Research Capital.
Unexpected healthcare costs, geopolitical risks, market volatility, inflation. Running out of money. These are some of the things keeping investors up at night. I can create a customized plan for you that factors in the things that are interrupting your beauty sleep. Then we can build your wealth to meet your unique life goals.
To get Janice looking out for you and your family, visit JaniceHoneyman.com.
You're worried about prices going up. What else is new? Another thing that hasn't changed is your need to renovate. So here's the bottom line to your bottom line. Planning a renovation next year? Now to the end of this year, all design packages offered by Royal Home Improvements are 20% off. Book your project by December 31st, 2025, based on the design you've purchased and lock in pricing through 2026. What will my kitchen, bath, and main floor rental look like? Good question. One that Royal Home Improvements can help answer. Their team of experts in home design will offer ideas to match your home to your lifestyle and budget and show you a 3D scale rendering before any work begins. Clients of Royal Home Improvements who are CARB members receive 10% off their next renovation up to a maximum of $2,000. Visit royalhomeimprovements.ca today or call 416-236-4400. A home you'll be proud of is their bottom line.
The Vegas Golden Knights have an ace showing in Mitch Marner. Does that mean the Buds are about to go bust?
Place your bets, ladies and gentlemen.
Talking NHL on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio. Pizzaville's got a really big special. Feed 4 or more for only $19.99 with Pizzaville's 3-topping extra-large pickup special. Bigger than 2 medium pizzas. Order online or call 416-736-3636.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, we are back here on The Garden Show, this very first Garden Show of November, incidentally. It is November 1, and it is feeling very much like fall out there. And in addition to Charlie and I, today we have a guest in the studio. We have Stephen Biggs, and he is a gardener and author extraordinaire. And so especially if you have some questions about figs and some other things like that, then we would love to hear from you. Stephen, we were chatting, Charlie, I'll let you take it away. We were talking about figs just before the break.
Yeah, we were just talking about how, like I just said, I need a better explanation on how these figs get buried, because it's, you know, we're talking on the radio, so I need a real visual. I know is it easy? Is it hard? Is it something people can do, trenching?
So it's easy in the sense that it's not complicated. It's hard in the sense that you have to do a bit of digging.
Yeah.
And what you're doing, imagine digging away the roots for a full half of the tree, 180 degrees around. And so that entails a bit of chopping and digging with the spade, but you're leaving half of the roots in place.
Right.
But now you've cut away half of those roots. And what you can do is actually just tip this tree flat to the ground. So you've got this hinge of roots remaining on the one side where you didn't dig, and you can tip this tree flat to the ground. Now, some people actually tip it into a trench. They'll dig a trench too, because when something's below ground and covered, then it's better insulated. I'm in Toronto, and I just tip it flat onto the surface of the ground and mulch it. And that gets it through my winter. But if you were somewhere colder, you could do the whole trench approach. And Dean, that makes me think of your neighbor Tommaso, where you had this,
yes,
this grave-like setting next door.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did. It was a trench. And so when he pulled up the boards, you could see all of the brush. It looked like it was full of brush and twigs. And it was so fascinating, because then he would have to, I recall that when he propped up the tree, he would have to have the tree propped up. He had a piece of board there propping up the tree to keep it, even when he put the dirt back, that's what he did to make sure that it stood up straight.
Yes. Yeah, because that you've cut off the roots on one side. So you need to hold it in place once you stand it back up.
Mm-hmm. And then for that growing season, new roots grow everywhere, mm-hmm. but particularly where they've been hacked back. But of course, then by September, October, we're chopping them again and tipping it down.
And I've heard people have asked me, well, isn't that hard on the tree to be cutting the roots away all the time? Maybe a good comparison is bonsai, where you think of these trees that can be sometimes centuries old, but they keep them small, they keep them growing by trimming the roots, and they trim the top of the plant. And with a fig tree, you're doing the same thing. You're pruning the roots and make sure to prune the top. I met a guy once who said, oh, I'm giving up figs. It's getting too big. It's too much work to cover it. And I said, well, you're the boss. You can prune that thing.
Exactly.
The height that you want.
Exactly. Huh. And when you said you mulch, what do you mulch with?
I mulch with bales of straw.
Mm.
And so you can be really creative with your mulch. Use bags of potting soil, straw. Some people use bags that they fill with dry leaves. Mm-hmm. I like the straw because the next year I use that straw to mulch in my garden. I compost some, but I do straw bale gardening too, which is a whole other discussion, but it's kind of a fun topic for urban gardeners with paved spaces.
Yeah, with limited, exactly. No, balconies, rooftops, that sort of thing. Oh gosh, yeah, I just came up with 10 questions in my brain.
Speaking of questions, we have some callers on the line. So let's get our first one in. We have Mary on the line from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Mary.
Yeah. I would like to ask, in what container could I store my dried herbs from the garden?
Is it a lot of, like, usually
in
just
glass,
a glass?
In plastic or in a paper bag?
I'd like to, if they're dried, truly dried herbs, I would put them into something that might even be a plastic bag if they're truly dried, or glass jars. A paper bag, you're going to find you're going to lose a fair amount of the, not just the aroma, but even the culinary aspect. Paper is there's too much airflow. Once they're truly dry, I get them sealed up.
Yeah.
And Stephen is agreeing with you.
Yeah, go ahead, Stephen.
I use mason jars on the countertop for the herbs because it looks nice too.
Mm-hmm. So just fill up, like you can buy the 1 liter, half liter mason jars, Mary, and just strip the leaves off the stems and pop them into the jars, and they're handy right there.
Excuse me, please. Could you talk a little bit louder? I can hardly hear you.
Okay, so you hang up your phone and turn up your radio is my suggestion.
Yep, thanks very much for the call there, Mary. Our numbers, again, are 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. Have to take a short break. We'll be right back with much more of The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show, and we have a few callers on the line. So let's go to our next caller, which is from your old stomping grounds there, Charlie Dobbin. Here is from Richmond Hill, Gabriella. Welcome to The Garden Show, Gabriella.
Good morning, all of you.
Morning.
Good morning. What do you got there for Charlie or for Stephen?
Well, I have one olive tree, 12 fig trees, and 10 lemon trees.
Wow.
Wow.
I love gardening, and I hear you guys every Saturday. The question that I have a most concern about, the olives doesn't give me no olives so far. It's a quite big tree, 4 or 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And the figs, I have them outside in the summer, and I bring them inside in the winter. They're all inside my sunroom. And what they do, the flower, I mean, they don't have enough figs. They don't give me enough figs.
Okay.
Whatever come in the spring, before I bring them outside, they drop the fruit. And outside, they bring the fruit late in the summer. And after them, they don't ripe in time when I have to bring them in. I don't know what I do wrong or what's the process. I did put it on the ground 1 year. That was so much work. I said, no way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all right, yeah. The pot,
so let's
and I bring them in and out in the spring, which in the summer, which is extra work too, but I enjoy my garden. What can I say? You know, this is my hobby.
Okay, so Gabriella, let Stephen give you, I think he's going to need to give you a few minutes of a lecture here on what the process is all the way through. So get your pen ready and make some notes.
Gabriella, for the olives, two things that are important to know to get olives. First of all, they need what's called chill hours. It's just a fancy way of saying they need some cold over the winter or they won't flower. And so sometimes I'll meet people who grow them as houseplants. They stay warm all summer. Those olives probably will never flower. So that's number one. And you can, if you have somewhere like a cold sunroom, or some people have a cold greenhouse, you can use that kind of location to keep your olive tree through the winter, because they can get pretty cold. They can go down below freezing. When it's in a pot, you don't want to go much below freezing. But anyway, they can take cold, and you have to give them cold. And then the other thing you want to know about olives is that some varieties need a different variety to pollinate them. So you need two different varieties. Now, it's not the case with all varieties. There are olive varieties that are what's called self-fertile. It means you only need one plant. And so you might want to look for a self-fertile olive. The favorite one that I recommend is called Frantoio. And you just email me if you want me to give you that name spelt out. Go to foodgardenlife.com, send me an email, say we talked on Charlie's show. But those are the two things to know.
Wow.
And then for getting figs, you know, it's a big problem with figs that are grown in pots that start to grow inside, and then we move them outside, and then all of a sudden there's cold wind and the conditions are different, and sometimes they just drop those little figs that started inside. And the trick there really is just to make it less stressful for the plant. So you move it out gradually, maybe for an hour or two a day, put it somewhere shaded, somewhere where there's no cold wind. That's really important.
Well, that's what I do. I bring them out when the weather's not cold. Mm-hmm. Before I bring them out, the figs, they come, you know, from when it's outside, inside, they drop already. And I have in the cell room, and the temperature's about less than 10 degrees. It's not very hot. I had it in the garage 1 year, and the same thing. Some, they died on me, and I can't figure out what I'm doing wrong.
It's if they're dropping those figs, there's some kind of stress. And so you have to think about what have I done that might have made stress for that plant. So again, it could be wind or different sun or different temperatures. There's some kind of change that's made stress for the plant. That's why it's dropping those first figs. And then you mentioned ripening too, and the trick in cold climates, because we've got this short season, more heat, more light, and put that fig in the warmest location possible, and that will help speed up ripening.
And for, you know, Gabriella or anybody else who's listening and wants to know more about figs or olives, you've published books. One is Growing Figs in Cold Climates, 150 of Your Questions Answered, and Grow Olives Where You Think You Can't. These books are both available on your website, I would think.
Yeah, they're both on my website, foodgardenlife.com. Thanks, Charlie.
Foodgardenlife.com. So if, Gabriella, you're still not sure about where the stress is coming from, you may find some more answers on Stephen's website. Thanks for your call.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, wonderful. Let's go to our next caller. We have Mary on the line from Brampton. Welcome to the Garden Show, Mary.
Thank you.
Morning.
What do you got there? What do you got for Charlie or Stephen?
Well, I have a rose shrub, and it's like 7 or 8 feet tall. I can't even reach it to deadhead it. So can I cut this down to 4 feet?
Okay, rose shrub. So is it, it sounds like it is a shrub rose, like it's a big bush?
Yes.
Yes, you can cut it down to even 2 feet tall, but I wouldn't do that now. If you can wait until the spring, that would be your better time to do some very hard pruning. Roses are super tough. You can really prune them, but I do my really extensive pruning in the spring. For now, the only pruning I do now is pruning to make sure that the plant isn't going to get broken in the wind or trap people trying to get to your front door because it's so big and overgrown. I always tell the story of roses I used to have near my front door in Richmond Hill. And before Halloween every year, I'd have to go out and trim the roses because otherwise I had children all winter in my roses, you know, stuck in there with all their capes and costumes. So yeah, just sometimes we trim for that purpose and also to avoid damage if they're really, really big and they're blowing around too much. But absolutely, go to town in the spring. So spring is April usually. In Brampton, probably April, mid-April, depending on the spring.
Great.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for the call there, Mary. Yeah, thank you. And there is nothing worse than coming out on November 1st and finding a trick-or-treater still stuck in your rose bushes. That's just embarrassing.
It's like, oh gosh, do I have any candy left? Like it just becomes, what do you do?
Yeah, that is an awkward situation indeed. We would love for you to give us a call if you live in Toronto. 416-360-0740. If you live outside Toronto, but still within the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. Of course, we're taking all our regular gardening questions, but if you have a fig question or you have an olive question, this is the perfect day to give us a call because we have Stephen Biggs with us as our special guest, and that is a big specialty of his. Our next caller on the line is Susan, and she's calling from Burlington. Welcome to the Garden Show, Susan.
Good morning.
Morning.
What have you got? I think you might have a question for Stephen.
Yes, I have a fig plant that I've had a couple of years. Friend gave it to me. It never seems to want to have more than two leaves, but I don't know what I'm doing wrong. My question is, it's in quite a small pot, only 6 inches across and about 5 inches deep. The plant itself, the stem is about a foot tall. I've got one leaf on the top that's getting brown on the edge, but it does have a sprout. I've got another leaf about halfway up that also has a little sprout. It's always just been an indoor plant. Do I need to up-pot it? Do they like to be crowded? Help!
Okay, go.
That's a good question. So it sounds like you're growing this indoors as a houseplant for the moment. Is that right?
Yes, I did briefly put it outside last summer, and I did actually get a fig on it with two leaves. And the fig almost ripened. So
if you're growing it inside, and it's actively growing right now, a 6-inch pot is pretty small, and that will, it's like bonsai, it'll just keep that plant very small. So give it a bigger pot and you will get a bigger plant. Now, with a lot of plants, we move really slowly when we increase the pot size. You don't want to jump to too much of a bigger pot. Figs are pretty tolerant of a bigger jump in pot size, and so you could double that easily, and you'll find that fig will all of a sudden start to get bigger pretty quickly. So give it a bigger pot. That's your first step.
Okay. And fertilize when I up-pot it or no?
Yeah. So when the plant is growing, you can feed it. And so give it some fertilizer as you pot it up, because you're keeping that plant growing now through the winter. And I wouldn't, sometimes people worry about getting a special fig fertilizer. You don't need to do that. Just use an all-purpose fertilizer, same kind of fertilizer you might use for house plants or hanging baskets. You don't need anything special. And so pot it up in a bigger pot, give it some fertilizer. And when you see brown around the edge of the leaves, like you were describing, that can often happen if the plant gets too dry, and it can easily get too dry when it's in a really small pot that dries out quickly. So I think you'll find if you move it to the bigger pot, it's going to jump ahead for you.
Great. I will be doing that today.
Okay. With potting mix. Remember, none of this garden soil. It's got to be potting mix, and it's got to be a pot with drainage holes.
Right.
Because we never, ever plant anything into a container without holes in the bottom. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call there, Susan.
Thanks, Susan.
Stephen, just speaking of dry and wet, are figs a little bit more tolerant of one or the other? Do they have a preference?
Oh, that's a great question, Dean. So people often think of figs and they think of arid climates and sometimes let the pots get really dry, which actually doesn't work. So a fig in the ground might have roots that go all over the place, so it can scavenge water. But when we're growing a fig in a pot, which a lot of people do in cold climates, you really have to water them regularly. And so don't let it get dry, because usually the first thing that happens if that fig gets too dry is it'll drop some leaves, or even worse, it'll drop the little figs that are forming. So keep them well watered. And that's such a great question, Dean. Mm-hmm.
Charlie is actually a big proponent of a pebble tray with the water underneath. Would that be something you'd want to do with a fig?
Well, just from a humidity perspective, right? Just because our homes tend to be so dry in the winter, you know, with the hot air furnaces, et cetera, blowing around, that some plants, you know, some really, really need higher humidity than we typically have indoors in the winter.
But speaking of pebble trays, it makes me think of saucers. If you're growing potted figs outside, sometimes in the heat of summer, when those trees are getting bigger and they're actively growing, we've got these hot days, 30 plus Celsius, those pots might dry out by the end of the day, and then you're losing your figs. So a simple way to deal with that is to put a saucer under your potted fig tree, because what happens is when you water it, any excess water that drains through that would normally run off stays in this saucer and then soaks back up into the pot as the plant uses water. And so it's not bone dry by the end of the day. So a saucer can be a really useful thing to keep your outdoor fig plants more well watered in the summer.
Particularly with a summer like we just had. So hot, so dry, and windy at my place. So, watering was so essential, assuming you had water, to do the watering, which is a bit of an issue here in Prince Edward County. Okay, one more quick question from me about figs. Do we, in the house, I bring in the figs for the winter, say, for example, do I want to avoid hot air drafts from the furnace vents or cold air drafts from a front door that opens and closes multi times a day? Do they want to be kept more stable?
Yeah, I mean, stable is always better. And when you think of hot air drafts and hot, dry conditions, then it becomes more ideal for spider mites. We don't want to encourage those. I've never had spider mites on my figs outdoors. But they're one of those things indoors. You know, indoors is always this perfect situation for some of these pests. So, I'd say avoid those hot, dry drafts. But in general, figs are pretty forgiving. So if you have a less than perfect spot, give it a try.
Yeah, exactly. You've done well 20 odd years later.
I've tried everywhere in the house, you know, in the basement under lights, in the basement stored in a cold bathroom that we had. Shelley almost divorced me for that, because I said, hey, we're not using the bathroom all winter. We're storing fig trees there in the garage.
What?
Very funny. Okay, we're going to go to our next call.
You've got to try. Go ahead, sorry, Dean.
No problem. We have Sharon on the line. Sharon's a first-time caller, and she is calling from Welland. Mm. Welcome to the Garden Show, Sharon.
Yes, good to be here.
I would love to give you your garden wings, my dear. There you go. Your well-earned garden wings. And what have you got for either Charlie or for Stephen?
Well, it is on the fig theme, and I have quite a few questions. My plant is outdoors. It has lots of leaves. It's about 2 years old and about 2 feet high and quite, as you said, quite bushy. I've never pruned it because I didn't know I should do that, but last year I covered it with a tent and leaves, a lot of leaves as the mulch, and it survived, but I got nothing, absolutely nothing, no flowers. I don't know if they do flower, but no flowers and no figs.
Okay.
I'd like to know what kind of fertilizer or how to bring about some fruit on it.
Oh, those are some good questions. So we've got an outdoor fig tree growing in the ground. It's a couple years old, a couple feet high, and it's bushy. And maybe I should start out by saying, you know, you're in Welland. It's going to be warmer here than in Toronto. I had a friend once who had a fig bush growing down in St. Catharines that he forgot to protect one winter. And it even came through the winter unscathed. It was a mild winter. So you've got you're perfectly set up there in Welland, and you will not get flowers that you see on there. The fig, what we think of as the fruit, is really cool. It's this inside out bundle of flowers. And in warmer areas, there's a little pollinating wasp that goes right in there and pollinates. We don't get that here, but we get figs anyway. That's a whole other story. So no worries if you don't see flowers. But the main thing I think you want to know about the fruit, Sharon, and for a two-year-old plant, it might just need to get a little bit bigger before you expect fruit. Now, when it comes to feeding a fig tree that's growing in the ground, if you have a good fertile soil, you might not need to feed it at all, because they've got pretty well-branched roots that go all over the place. They can scavenge a lot of food from the soil, but you can also top dress the soil with a little bit of manure in the spring, and that's as much as you need.
Okay, thank you very much for the call there, Sharon. We do have to run to our next break, but we would love for all you to give us a call as well, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740. We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We are back here on The Garden Show, and I couldn't help but wonder when I was hearing that theme music listing all those flowers, and I thought, I don't know, it seems like Stephen doesn't have the time or inclination to worry about flowers. He wants to grow stuff that has a nice fruit to it.
Edibles.
Yeah.
Well, there's edible flowers. Actually, though, I do, Dean, like flowers. I got a bunch of tulips and daffodils I'm planting later today.
Oh, very nice. My wife and I did that a couple of weeks ago.
You got them in the ground?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Within days of picking them up from you, we got them right in. We just didn't waste any time in the ground.
Nice. Both Stephen and I this afternoon are in our separate gardens planting daffodils and tulips this afternoon. But I got my garlic in the ground, I'm proud to say. Mm. 44 cloves. So if I can just figure out, I need a shed so I can cure them at the end of the season. I got my sweet potatoes out of the ground, and they are currently in my bathroom. Speaking of making bathrooms inaccessible, they're curing in my bathroom because they like heat. Instead of cold, sweet potatoes like heat for the couple of weeks after you dig them up just to harden them off a bit. You end up with a thicker skin, and then they'll store for months and months if you can do that curing, I find.
Stephen, a quick question. I know figs have a fairly, as I know it, they have a fairly short shelf life. You kind of have to enjoy them as they come off. But olives, of course, what do you do with all your olives? What do you do?
Oh, yeah. So the olives, the thing is, you can't eat the olives straight off the tree because they are just terribly bitter. So you have to get that bitterness out. So first what I do is I slit them lengthwise or prick them with a fork, and I put them in water. And I change the water every day for 1 or 2 weeks. And then from there, you move them into a salt brine and leave them for 1, 2, 3 months. And this process pulls out the bitterness. And then at the end of that, I'll just taste one and think, okay, is it ready to eat? And when it is, I'll marinate them, you know, garlic and olive oil, mm-hmm. red wine, vinegar, a few other things. And then it's ready to eat.
Ooh.
Wait,
I think I've already decided I want some Stephen Biggs olives.
Either that or you want an olive tree.
I had a guest one day who came over and she ate the whole olive bowl. I couldn't believe she kept going for more, but she was in love with those olives.
Well, and you're like, these are precious.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be happy to bring some cheese and baguette, okay? And we'll sit down and enjoy some of your olives down the line.
We have a deal.
Okay,
well, okay,
got it.
But I have a silly question. Green mm-hmm. olives, black olives, those are just different varieties, right?
Well, here's
May I interject? I think that a black olive, I always thought, was just a riper green olive. Now, I might be wrong.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You've got it.
Okay,
you've got
good.
It. So when you have those dark-colored olives, that's just the riper stage. When they're green, they've been picked before they're fully ripe. But some will ripen to black, some will ripen to purple. You think of different fruits where we have different varieties with different colors.
Right, like our peppers that all start green, but then if you leave them long enough, they'll turn yellow or orange or red.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, there you go. Well, I was thinking it's more like grapes, right? There's purple grapes and green grapes, but no. Yeah. Olives are all green and then whatever, once they're ripe. Good to know.
Sweet.
Okay.
Okie dokie. Okay, let's go to our next call. We have Ron on the line from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Ron.
Thank you very much. Charlie, quick question. We've got a 7-foot-tall money tree, and some of the leaves have like white blotches on it or white markings on it. What causes that?
So the white blotches, would they rub off if you put your ring or
thumb? No, because it's right through both sides.
Oh, so the tissue's actually dead, but it's white?
Correct, correct. It's like some of them are like the size of, a silver dollar or a quarter on the actual mm-hmm. leaf. And I thought maybe I should clip some of those off because otherwise it'll go to all the leaves.
Not necessarily. It's more a question of if the tissue is actually dead, like crispy, where those blotches are, my brain goes to sunburn. Is it possible that those leaves got sunburned earlier in the season?
Correct. It is in the sun. It is in the sun. But it's only a few of them, not all of them. You would think that all of them would be burnt in that because they're by a big window.
But you probably churn the tree fairly regularly, I would think.
Correct, yes.
And you keep it really moist? You water it often?
Yeah, I water it often, and I mist it every couple of days.
Hmm. Ron, is it just the lower leaves, or is it spread throughout?
The higher, some of them are like roughly 3-4 feet high. Hmm. And maybe roughly about 10 of them, not the whole tree.
Right. So you're ultimately going to remove those leaves. I just liked if a leaf still has green tissue, so it's still photosynthesizing, I tend to leave leaves on my plants until there's no green left. So that rather than raping and pillaging and removing them early. However, you know, if you've got a garden club coming for a visit or a tour coming through, then yes, sharp pruners, remove any unsightly leaves. Compost, and that will also give you an opportunity to really see if this is a problem that's continuing or this was just a one-shot problem.
I see. But you don't think it'll spread, whatever it is, spread to the other leaves, or it's not likely?
If it was a fungal disease, I would be worried that it was exactly what would happen. But if you can't rub it off, if this is not a superficial issue, but actually tissue that is turned, you know, from probably brown to yellow to white, then I would say, no, this is nothing infectious or contagious. What do you think, Stephen?
Yeah, I'm thinking of my own money tree where some of the leaves, especially lower down, are doing what you're describing, Ron, where they're turning a bit white. And it's because I've got imperfect conditions in the house, and it's dry, the light's not great. And I'm wondering if that's what's going on there. And these plants sometimes will shed those lower leaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very normal.
So where the marking is, will that ever come green again or no?
No.
It will not.
No. Once the tissue's dead, the tissue's dead.
It is dead. Okay. Yeah. So I'll just keep a close eye on it then.
Yeah. And do keep turning it in the light. Keep, as you indicated, you know, lots of water. We don't do a lot of fertilizing usually at this time of year because we're not getting a lot of active growth. But do consistently fertilize once February, March comes around and the days start getting longer and the plants will really respond if you're giving them fertilizer.
How often should it be water the money tree?
I think it depends on your temperatures. The proper name of money tree, like it's good you're calling because this is kind of, I've never grown this plant. Stephen indicates that he's got it. It's actually, it looks like a Schefflera, but it's not. It's called Pachyra aquatica. Well, so anything with a name like aquatica is obviously a water-loving plant. So in the tropics, they are planted near to streams and ponds and bodies of water. In a pot in our homes, it's just keep them moist at all times. Thanks a lot,
okay.
Ron.
Thanks very much. Yeah, thanks very much for the call there, Ron. And, you know, as the guy who knows the least amount on the show here, I got to say, it is a money tree. And if it's got round spots that look like silver dollars or quarters, is that not appropriate? What's going on here? What's the concern? It's a money tree.
Exactly. Get out your little scissors and cut out those dollars, loonies and toonies.
Hey, let's just be thankful they're the size of silver dollars and not the size of pennies.
What's a penny?
What is a penny?
Yeah, really. I haven't seen a penny in ages.
No, I got a whole jar full of them. Okay, here are the numbers to call. Just before we go to our next break, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
We're back here on The Garden Show. The time is at 9:53. It is the first day of November. My goodness, we're in our last couple of months of this year. It's feeling more and more like fall all the time. We have a special guest on the show, Stephen Briggs. And
Biggs.
I beg your pardon. And is it just how many books have you written in total, Stephen?
I've got two on figs, one on olives, one on lemons, and a couple kids' books, too. So,
okay, are a busy, busy guy.
Stephen's daughter, Emma, wrote a book with him. It's probably, 8 years ago now that book came out?
Yeah, so Gardening with Emma. And it was all a kid telling kids how to garden and make it fun. So we had we had fun together on that project, yeah.
And you and Emma came into the studio back when, before Dean was on the show and Frank was my co-host. And she was great. She was so articulate. And she was like 13 at the time.
That was so much fun. The studio is such a fun vibe.
Yeah. And she's, I guess, in other parts of the world, exploring horticulture.
Working on a mountaintop in New Zealand with a chainsaw.
Oh, not a lot.
Good for her.
That's serious horticulture.
Wow.
Well, what is she doing with a chainsaw? Wait.
There's an invasive pine species there, and I can't remember the name of this pine. But her current job is removing this invasive pine species. So when they come to big trees, then it takes the chainsaw.
Oof, good for her.
Yeah.
Wow. Nice part of the world to be in, indeed. Okay, yeah. we have another caller on the line. We have a couple we should be able to get to. We have Mary on the line from Toronto. Welcome to The Garden Show, Mary.
Oh, good morning, everyone, on this sad Blue Jays morning. It's a call for Stephen.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Stephen. Stephen, I have a fig tree that I grew from a cutting, and it's at least 50 years old. When I moved from the apartment, it grew beautifully. It took up the whole thing. I cut it in half, and I gave part of it to my superintendent because I didn't want to let it go. But the thing is, it's grown so much. It's been in a 10-inch pot for years now. Every spring, every fall usually, I put it in new soil, I cut the roots, I cut the tops. I don't cut it down that much. But the problem is, you could say it's almost where the knot is. It almost takes three of us, someone to hold it straight in the pot while the rest of us put in the soil. but I can't get the bump, the big root, to go underground to have it straight. What can I do?
Oh, so there's that much root that you have on there. Well, you might might have to give it a bit of a deeper
cut. It's not that many hair roots. It's just the main big one that if I could slice part of it off, I could get it to stand straight in the 10-inch pot. I can't handle anything bigger.
Okay. If there's a lot of branching of roots above where you'd like to cut it off to fit it in the pot, I'd feel comfortable cutting that bottom part off if it's well branched. So you can feel fine doing that.
Thank you. Yeah. Don't be afraid to trim roots. I mean, that's often exactly what, you know, use a saw if necessary. Get Emma and her chainsaw. So don't hesitate. Listen, Stephen, before we're almost at the end of the show, so I just wanted to talk to you about one of your other projects, another new project you're working on, which is the Gardener's Journal, something that I've certainly talked about in the past on this show because it's such a lovely Christmas gift for any gardener on your list.
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited about this project and really honored because it was started many years ago by the late Margaret Bennett Alder. Just a beautiful project, Toronto Gardener's Journal, but now it's becoming the Canada Gardener's Journal. We've got a super duper source list in there for all Canadian supplies. You can journal what's going on in your garden. We've got frost dates in there for across the country and great record sections. So it's a lot of fun.
It's, you know, I use it for the frost dates. So I basically the way it works is you're trying to figure out when your last spring frost date is going to happen so that you can back up when to start your seeds or when to get ready to plant outside. So I always do that. Like I sit here, I go, okay, typically where I live, my last frost date is say the third week of May. And then I back up. So I don't plant my tomato seeds too early and I don't plant my peppers and you know, you just, it's a very good organizational tool. And now you are going to be in charge of it.
Yes, exactly. So, and I have more about it at foodgardenlife.com. Mm-hmm. We'll have it out in November sometime. I'm really excited because it's been a big workup to this. So it's now the Canada Gardener's Journal.
And it'll be for sale probably at Toronto Botanical Gardens and places like that, right?
We're going to get it into some nurseries around town as well.
And stores. Yeah, great. Good, good, good. Excellent.
Well, when I come down with my baguette and my cheese for my olives, I'm going to get a signed copy of that journal.
I love it.
Okay, Dean, let me know when you're going to Stevens. I'll meet you there because I know where he lives.
You got Stevens, it. We'll go together.
Stevens in North York on a nice big suburban property. So, you know,
lovely.
Had a lot of opportunity to try stuff on that space. In that space.
Maybe
so listen,
we can do an episode from here, Charlie.
Yeah, maybe we could. Ooh. Hey, thanks a bunch for joining us today, getting up early. I know after Halloween shenanigans, it's always tough to get up. But thanks a bunch, Stephen. Really appreciate all your insights and helping out all my callers.
Thank you for having me. Lots of fun.
Sweet. Thanks a bunch, Dean. Same to you, Owen. I know, again, those shenanigans. Go Jays. You know what we're doing tonight, right? See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.